Bulletproof Radio, a state of high performance.
You're listening to Bulletproof Radio with Dave Asprey.
Quick question for you. What makes you feel more invigorated, less stressed, and more in control of your body? The answer, more energy. Specifically, more quantum energy, because our bodies are quantum systems. Leela Quantum Tech has figured out a way to harness quantum energy so you can reach a state of vibrancy that you've probably never felt. Dozens of studies show that LeelaQ's products neutralize the effects of harmful EMFs around us and even release positive energy that can improve your blood flow, optimize your heart rate, and other benefits. LeelaQ has some heavy science backing it up. A recent study looked at people who use LeelaQ for just 10 minutes. The study used a special blood illumination technique called dark field microscopy, and it showed significant protective and improvement effects on blood flow. So take a quantum leap into higher vibration at LeelaQ.com/Dave and claim your exclusive 10% discount. Everyone's talking about red light therapy beds, and for good reason. There's a company called ARRC LED that's building an entirely new class of LED devices. ARRC LED beds integrate proprietary scanning technology and frequency protocols to shape the delivery of 6 different wavelengths in dose-optimized photobiomodulation. Yes, that's a lot of words. What it is, though, is that photobiomodulation improves the underlying energetics of the cells in your body. And those changes can benefit nearly every tissue and organ and system in your body. You change your cells and you change your life. For more information, visit ARRCLED.com.
Today's cool fact of the day is a not-so-cool statistic about common prescriptions. Studies of about 550 different pharmaceutical drugs showed that about 35% of them damage your mitochondria. And mitochondria are the batteries or the power plants in your cells. And if you damage those with drugs, it's a really serious concern, and you're unlikely to see warnings about this on the label.
Hey there, ice bath lovers. Do you want to take your cold exposure game up a notch with some contrast therapy? Well, you should, because cold plunges and contrast therapy can lower stress, up your immunity, and even help you sleep better. It works better than just cold therapy alone. Well, now you can do that with the new Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tubs by Master Spas. Whether you want to relax in a hot soak or get energized with a cold plunge, the Michael Phelps Chili Goat Cold Tub has you covered. You can easily hop out of the hot water, get in the cold water, and go back and forth. When you do that, you get better results in less time, and that's what biohacking is all about. Go to chiligoattubs.com, use promo code DAVE500, and you can save $500 on any Chili Goat cold tub. I have one in my backyard. That's chiligoattubs.com, promo code DAVE500.
All right, today's guest is someone who I'm really honored to have on the show. And his name is Dr. Bill Sears. And unless you live under a rock, you might have heard of him, because he's a highly respected pediatrician practicing medicine for more than 40 years. He's written 45 books on parenting, nutrition, and wellness. He runs the Dr. Sears Wellness Institute. And he's talked pretty much on every TV show you can think of. It's hard to introduce him because he's been everywhere. What I like about Dr. Sears' work is that he talks about positive behavioral changes for people, but also particularly for kids and families, and it's science-backed, simple strategies. And he's also recovered from colon cancer 20 years ago. So he went from having this focus on what's happening with families to what's going on with the system of humans. And he's got a new book called The Inflammation Solution that covers his health hacks. The Inflammation Solution is something you should read if you've read The Bulletproof Diet. And if you haven't, shame on you. You listen to Bulletproof Radio and you haven't read the most distilled knowledge I could make for you. So pick up your copy of The Bulletproof Diet while you're at it. But also pick up The Inflammation Solution by Bill Sears, because we're both going to tell you the same thing. Inflammation is what matters. It matters more than almost anything else. And I'll also tell you from writing Headstrong, guess what causes inflammation? Mitochondrial dysfunction. You can't have inflammation without mitochondrial dysfunction, or at least damage or stress. So that's what he manages in 40 years of medical practice, way more experience than I have, but his conclusion is valid and real, and you totally need to hear from him. So Bill, welcome to the show. It's really an honor to have you on.
Well, thank you, Dave. It's an honor to be here, and When I read your book, Bulletproof Diet, that is the closest book to my inflammation solution book I have ever read. So we are on the same channel, and thank you very much. It's an honor to be your guest.
Well, I'm amazed to hear that, and that bodes well for the approach. Because, I mean, honestly, I've taken a lot of flack for saying it's okay to eat fat, and I feel like the tide has turned. I'm about to give a talk this week at the largest natural food show. This is where all the food manufacturers go to figure out what's coming next, and I'm giving a keynote address, and the title of it is Fat is Back. And yes. Because here's and this is neat on Google. You can actually see searches for high fat are now higher than low fat. Like they crossed over about 2 years ago, where people are actually searching for high fat foods. Maybe your 40 years of tireless toil on this has made a difference.
Well, you know, absolutely, Dave. That fat is back, and it should never have gone away. The absolute worst dietary advice we've ever gotten in the whole world is low-fat diets.
Yeah.
Now, what I realized years ago, that when so-called science blocks common sense, suspect shaky science. And that whole
yes.
low-fat stuff was based on shaky science. And what really got me into it is mother's milk. All right, let's begin. Mother's milk is 50% fat. Dr. Mother Nature doesn't make a mistake. So I first thought as a pediatrician, why is mother's milk half fat? A high-fat milk. Well, what is the number one organ that's affected, for better or worse, by nutrition? The brain.
Yes.
And the brain is 60% fat. And the way I get my patients to pay attention, I says, we're fatheads. We're all fatheads. Mom, you are growing a little fathead. They need a right fat diet, not a low fat diet. So I'm so happy that we agree that fat is back, and I don't think it'll ever go away again.
Calling it a right fat diet is really cool too, because there's this problem where, oh, high fat diets are okay, great. Like, let's load you up with some highly processed soy and milk protein isolate, and let's throw in some canola and some corn and cottonseed oil, and you're off to the races.
Oh.
That can be even a ketogenic high-fat diet, but man, yeah. You're not going to like what happens to you or your babies if you're at childbearing age.
Absolutely. In fact, the first foods, remember the old days we started babies on rice cereal, the first food?
Yeah.
Down. There's no fat in rice cereal.
And plus, we're growing they can't all digest starch. Like for the first year, like babies just fart it out. It's not okay.
Yeah, right. They do. Literally. I've seen that. So that we have 8 children, as you know. So we've changed a lot of diapers. But the first food we start babies at 6 months. I have the fathead talk with my mom. I said, now we'll start on avocados as the first food.
Yes.
Avocados at 6 months. And guess what? At 7 months, the number one food for inflammation and the brain, and it swims in the sea, and it's pink, salmon.
Yep.
And I have a little sign in my office, salmon at 7 months. And the moms look at me and say, really? I've never heard of that.
Yeah.
So avocados at 6 months, salmon at 7 months.
And I'm guessing it's wild-caught, probably sockeye salmon, not the farm salmon.
Absolutely. Wild yeah. salmon. And you know, Dave, I we have a lot in common. I learned so much from Dr. Mother Nature, my most trusted scientist. Now, I didn't know a lot about fish, but I realized they had to be healthy for you. When like you did, I had to undergo a real health change to save my life. So I went to go fishing in Alaska.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there, I'm watching these salmon, and they're not that pink as they start out, but when they start their final marathon uphill for 4 miles, they get pinker and pinker and pinker. So I asked my favorite fisherman up there, his name's Randy Hartnell, and he runs his fish is a Vital Choice.
Vital Choice, that's right.
And I love it. And he, I said, Randy, why are salmon pink? So he said, well, suppose you're a marathon runner and you're running uphill for 4 miles. by the time you got up the top of the hill, you'd have arthritis, your muscles would oxidative stress, you'd have inflammation everywhere. So Dr. Mother Nature says, hey, salmon, stop by our little pharmacy here, F-A-R-M, pharmacy here, and I'll infuse into you a natural pink pigment called astaxanthin.
Yes.
Astaxanthin is Mother Nature's most powerful, powerful antioxidant, anti-inflammatory. Otherwise, the salmon's muscles would fall apart. And I said, wow, you know, if it's good for salmon, could it be good for humans? So I took a trip over to Hawaii for, when they had the Hawaiian Marathon. And I see, wow, these marathon runners, they pop a pill of Hawaiian astaxanthin before their race. And so I learned so much from salmon, and I brought that information back to my medical practice. And one of the two words I always tell all the patients at every age, go fish. Go fish. Very simple.
For breakfast this morning, my 7 and 9-year-old had grass-fed butter pieces. Ooh. Wrapped in a wild-caught cold-smoked sockeye salmon.
Oh, wow.
With avocado slices. Good. So lots of salt, because salt in the morning is good for you.
A good brain start. And you know, Dave, actually, I'm glad you mentioned that, because when parents come into my office, I say, oh, welcome. What brings you here? Well, the school says Johnny has ADD or ADHD. Well, now, I can tell a little bit by reading your books. You and I have that in common. We probably had the label of ADHD, like a hyperactive kid. So anyway, so I say, well, what'd you have for breakfast? All the stuff and the colored stuff and the high carbs and low fat and all that.
Fruity pebbles, yeah.
Yeah, that stuff. And I say, Johnny doesn't have ADD. He has NDD, nutrition deficit disorder.
I thought you were going to say salmon deficiency disorder, but I...
salmon deficiency. And I said, you send him off to school with junk food, and you get junk learning, and you get junk behavior. But what you just said for your 9-year-old, wow, a smart diet, we call it, and a great smart diet. Thank you.
We have a couple of vegans my kids go to school with, and their parents will give them an apple for breakfast. And these poor kids come into school, and they can't make it for an hour and a half before their brains are all over the place. And then the whole class has to stop so they can have their 10 a.m. snack. And it's like, really? Like, my kids go 4 hours without eating because they ate enough, and they ate enough fat. It kind of makes me sad. Right.
And the school teachers don't get it. So, in fact, we have a whole book on fat, and that's called the omega-3 effect. Mm-hmm. And I realized that was one of the problems in schools. And there's fascinating research. I know you're a show-me-the-science person, too, as I am. And I think our readers deserve science-based information. Yeah. And there is solid science out there that you start your child off to school with a smart breakfast, they're going to do much better. And I tell my patients 4 smart foods to give your children. Seafood, mainly wild salmon. Mm-hmm. Blueberries. Blueberries are called the brain berry.
Yep.
And greens and nuts. An easy way to remember, go fish, go blue, go greens, and go nuts.
You are a master after having written 45 books at making things memorable. Question on nuts. Raw or roasted? Which way?
Raw.
Okay. We agree on a lot of things, don't we?
We should. Well, you know, don't mess with Mother Nature. Yeah. She's got a lot more experience than we do.
It's true. And I'm all over hacking things. And what I found is your body is designed to respond to the environment around you. Yeah. So you can change the signal and let Mother Nature respond to the new signal you put in, but you're not going to do well by changing the building blocks of your body. You can't eat aluminum and have aluminum skin. It doesn't work like that.
Yeah, absolutely. And I love your term biohacker. It's the first book I've ever read that uses that term. And I'm, shall we say, technologically challenged. So I had to ask my techie kids what hacker meant and everything. And I realized that when I was making my health transformation, I realized somewhere in our body, we have got to have a pharmacy.
Yes.
Because the designer of our body, if you were making the greatest machine in the world, the brain and the body, you would know that we're going to mess it up.
Yeah.
We're humans. So to prevent that, preventive medicine, you would put inside our body a pharmacy that makes most of the medicines we're ever going to need. And that discovery actually won the Nobel Prize. And I remember 20 years ago when I was undergoing my transformation, I invited the Nobel Prize winner who discovered the pharmacy, Dr. Lou Ignaro, down to our home for dinner. And he was teaching me about the pharmacy. So I said, I got to make this simple. So if our listeners can have a mental image now, I'm going to take you inside your body and show you where in the world of your body is your pharmacy. And it's the lining of your blood vessels called the endothelium. It's the biggest organ of the body that people never heard of, half of them. The lining of your blood vessels, I call it the silver lining, has trillions. There's a picture now, a little mental picture, trillions of microscopic medicine bottles. They actually look like tiny little squirt bottles under a microscope, you know, squirt bottles. And those squirt bottles 24/7 squirt medicines into your bloodstream. Medicines that lower the highs, like high blood sugar, high blood pressure, high blood cholesterol. Medicines that raise the lows, like antidepressants. Medicines that mellow your moods, anti-anxiety medicines. Medicines that heal your hurts, anti-inflammatories. Medicines that keep your blood from clotting too fast, anticoagulants. So I just mentioned most of the medicines we take at all ages. But we can make them. And the pills you make inside are better than the pills you take because they're custom made just for you. They come out the right dose at the right time. So that is what I could say, I hope it's correct. Let's biohack and open our natural pharmacy.
Very well said. The idea of hacking, and I actually was a computer security professional in my former life, but the idea of hacking is you need to take control of a system, but you don't know much about it because it's not yours. And it turns out we don't know that much about our bodies. We know more than we used to, but there's still a lot of mysteries in there. So you can still take control of it without knowing everything. You just need enough to get in, right? Mm-hmm. And what you're describing there, if you imagine, if you're going to inject something, you inject it into your blood, right? So It would make sense if you were evolving a system like the body that, well, why have just one spot for injection? Just line the arteries so they can put things into circulation quickly.
And exactly.
Endothelial damage is something, by the way, you know what fried foods do.
They fry your arteries, right?
they do. And it's one of those things. You could smoke a cigarette or you could eat a bunch of fried food. Which one would you pick?
Yeah, well, you know, actually, I think the fried food's probably worse for you.
Yeah, see, I do too.
It is for you because I'll tell you why. Let me go back into the pharmacy and get that mental picture of those little squirt bottles lining your arteries. Well, when you eat that big burger or that fried chicken, oh, yum, that fried chicken, it goes into your bloodstream and it spikes. Now, spikes is the bad word inflammation.
It spikes inflammation, okay.
Spikes. Avoid spikes. Now, avoid sticky stuff spikes. That's how I make it simple for my patients in the office. I say, Joe, man, you're loaded with sticky stuff, and I got to measure it. So when that fried stuff called sticky stuff gets into your blood, it lands on top of the medicine bottles, and your pharmacy is closed. So every time you get that big burger and that fried chicken, the sticky stuff, picture, I'm getting sticky stuff on the top of my medicine bottles. Now, sticky stuff.
is it fibrinogen, like clotting factors you're talking about?
Yeah, fibrinogen, hemoglobin A1C, homocysteine, oxidized cholesterol.
Oh, so markers of inflammation, basically.
The markers, exactly. Okay. Just markers is, I call it, for the kids, I call it sticky stuff. And so, in fact, I was given a talk one day at a school, a first grade class. Mm-hmm. And I was talking about, if you put sticky stuff in your mouth, you get sticky stuff on top of your medicine bottle. 6-year-olds now. Okay. So that night, mom took the kids, some of the class out for let's call it sticky burgers. Okay, out to a burger joint to sticky burgers, and as they pulled in, the 6-year-old scolded her daddy. Says, "Daddy, we can't eat that. If you put sticky stuff in your mouth, you get sticky stuff on top of your medicine bottles." Oh my goodness, 6 years of age.
Kids actually want to eat to be powerful when you show them what it's for.
Oh, they love it.
With burgers, I'm assuming if you take off the bun and all the other crap they put on them and you're just eating high quality beef, the story changes?
It does, yes. Okay. In fact,
just wanted to double check for listeners going, I can't eat any hamburger meat. No, we eat a lot of hamburger meat, but I know the cow it came from.
Exactly. Okay. You took the burger words right out of my mouth.
Okay, just checking there. You had me scared for a minute. I'm like, no, really? He's anti-burger. See, end of interview. Just kidding.
Beef is good.
Okay.
We badmouth beef because of what they do to it. So I'm going to a little confession here for our listeners. Once or twice a month, I have a nice, big, juicy venison burger. Wild game. My consultation fee for someone in Wisconsin or Pennsylvania, my two favorite deer states, are I get some venison in the mail. So I love my venison. Little venison burger and a glass of Zinfandel sipped slowly, and wow. But if I don't know the farmer, if I don't know the farm the beef came from and how that farmer cared for that beef, I won't eat it. And I tell my patients not to eat it if you don't know where it came from.
You have to be religious about your beef. My beef here, I live on an organic farm on Vancouver Island. So the salmon swim about a 10-minute walk behind the camera. And
oh,
the
wonderful.
Cows that I eat the grass from the 2 acres on the front of my property. They come and they cut the grass down and give it to the cows. That's not all they eat. They eat other grass from other places. But there's no Roundup. It's never been sprayed with Roundup. It's as clean as I know to make it. Because I have 2 young kids and they're sensitive to this kind of stuff. Like all children are. Mine aren't more sensitive. They're just supposed to be growing up in this environment, and it's probably good for me too, given that I'm flying 120 days of the year. So,
yeah, I do too a lot.
Oh, you do.
Again,
let me ask you about that, because you're 77 years old. You look really healthy. It's hard on me to fly that much, but how do you stay healthy when you fly? Like, what do you do before you get on an airplane, when you're in the air, and when you land? I have to know, because almost
Trip. Last year, I flew 155,000 miles.
Dang.
On American Airlines. So here's what I do. Now, I'm 77, but I'm enjoying the goal of every senior. Everything works and nothing hurts. That's the goal I have for the seniors in my practice. So, what I do prior to the flight, all right, I make a big smoothie. I take 13 ingredients and I make a smoothie and I sip on it on the way to the airport. So I am loading my body and brain with antioxidants because I'm going to be up there with radiation getting, shall we say, oxidized. And then when I get to the gate and get through the gate, I walk around a lot. And I do what I call isometrics, where you're standing tense and you put your arms together and you stand on your toes and you just really get the blood moving. In fact, I was doing that before a flight one time. One of the flight attendants came up and said, "Sir, if you're afraid of flying, we have counselors for that," because I was doing this tense exercise. And then when I get on the plane, I do isometrics. I lift the, I can get a good workout. I lift the my legs up and put the heels together and flex my pecs and flex all the muscles, you know, about every 5 minutes. And do a little 1 minute of isometrics. I take lots of deep breaths. And when, and it's interesting, there's been a study showing that pilots, if they load themselves up with antioxidants, have less effects from radiation. Antioxidants, yeah. Fruits and vegetables, like you mentioned so much throughout your Bulletproof Diet book. And then when I where I stay, I only stay at hotels with open windows, fresh air.
Me too. I would like to say that, but my assistant says it's like prioritize that, yes.
It's very hard. Have a pool, have a gym, and I also take my exercise bands. You know, the bands, I put those in a suitcase. And sometimes when the flight is late or delayed, I'll go in the men's room and have a little workout on my exercise bands. So those are just some, you know, good little travel tips. I pick a baggie of nuts and nibble on nuts as a snack.
It makes so much sense. I take a big fistful of plant-based antioxidants when I travel as well. And I always make sure I have ketones present using Brain Octane. So I will go through the gate, and then I'll go to the usually it's a Starbucks at the airport. Starbucks has the best water filters of any coffee company.
Oh, it's good to know.
Yeah,
good.
For the hot water at least. So they're very strict about that. I know because I hired 3 of the first 10 Starbucks employees at Bulletproof. So I was going to say, can I get some hot water? And I tip them really well. And then I pour my own coffee, ground coffee, and I brew my coffee.
Oh, good for you.
And I shake it up, but I want the Brain Octane. So I do that and my fistful of antioxidants before I get on. And coffee itself has the polyphenols. Because if you're in the air with the bad air that's recirculated, everything's covered in endocrine disruptors and flame retardants, and you're breathing God knows what, jet exhaust. Yeah. You got to protect yourself, right?
Oh, you really do. And you know, that's the thing. And really, the older we get, the more we have to protect ourselves. And one of the things, too, at travel, you're out of your comfort zone at home. You're out of your kitchen, let's call it that. You're out of you're away from your farm. Yeah. So there's that tendency to go down that big pig out buffet when you travel. So I have a little what I call my rule of twos. Eat twice as often, eat half as much, and chew twice as long. The smaller your meal, the better you'll feel. And so even when I travel, I try to keep those smaller meals because it's so hard. I mean, you're going out to dinner with friends or after a lecture. I'm sure you're tired. You're very tired and hungry after a lecture.
It takes a lot of energy.
So it takes a lot of energy. So it's very hard not to, shall we say, pig out when you travel.
Now I practice intermittent fasting quite often when I travel. And that usually means I do have a big meal, but it's kind of two big meals in the day. So like I might have Bulletproof coffee for breakfast or no breakfast. And then I'll have a sizable lunch and a moderate to sizable dinner, but with a couple thousand calories at least. Is that something you'd recommend or not recommend? It's fine to say it's not what you'd recommend, but I'm curious.
Well, it's something that I personally am not a fan of.
Yep.
However, see, what I've learned is, and I don't like these books that say, you know, never eat this, never eat this, you know. Intermittent fasting, I have several patients in my office who swear by it. It works.
For some people.
It really works for some people. And again, see, when it works, good sense. See, what you're doing with intermittent fasting, you're giving the mitochondria, you mentioned mitochondria. I'm so glad you mentioned that. I love those little energy batteries.
Yeah, we'll talk more about those. Yeah.
Yeah, let's do it. Let's talk, and
tell me more.
And, but with intermittent fasting, what you're doing is lowering spikes. these spikes, avoid spikes. And mm-hmm. and I teach this in my office. So maybe I'll do that now. We have, let's say we have George the Gorger. All right, George the Gorger, and our listeners, sorry, men, that we'll use men as the not too healthy gender and the ladies as the picture of health. That's for political reasons. But say George the Gorger. George doesn't intermittent fast. He just gorges.
Yeah.
Big plates, big fries, fast eater, fast eater. Well, within an hour, George's spikes, sticky stuff spikes in his blood, go way up, and the blood flow to the brain quivers. You don't want that. The blood flow to the heart, the blood flow to the joints, the gut, the vessels are in spasm from high spikes. But Grazy the Grazer, or Grazy the intermittent faster, does not spike. So the simplest I can make the effect of intermittent fasting, it avoids insulin spikes. See, avoiding insulin spikes, if somebody say, give me health in three words, I would choose avoid insulin spikes. And that's what intermittent fasting does.
It's awesome, because I came to the same conclusion after reading Gary Taubes' book. And also
just
meeting Gary Taubes. He spoke at the anti-aging nonprofit group that I run. And I was like, okay, there's something to be said for keeping insulin low. So what can I eat in the morning that has zero insulin effect? And the answer is fat. And that was
one
of the things behind Bulletproof Coffee. And it's been measured by third parties. There's zero insulin effect. So I don't get an insulin spike. And the pancreas can relax. And there's no protein digestion, which also causes insulin. And that was one of the ideas that came together into making that what would you do? And the other one came from Robert Atkins, induction period.
Fat guy.
Yeah, like 2 ounces of cream cheese or something, but there's reasons not to do that. But it did come together. So I love that idea of avoid spikes. What other spikes besides insulin should we avoid, though?
Well, sugar spikes.
So okay, glucose.
You mentioned the magic word there of health, relax. So say, let's talk about your arteries again, because there's a medical truism that every organ in our body is only as healthy as the blood supply to it.
Mm-hmm.
So if our vessels are healthy, our organs are healthy. So when you eat, say, drink a cola, let me start with the worst spike you get. A cola, sugar water, bad stuff. You drink a cola, you spike. You eat an egg, for example, which is fat and protein, and you don't spike. And so if I were a blood vessel and could talk to the egg eater, I would say, thank you. Relax, man. I'm relaxing my vessels. When my vessels are relaxed, they're open more. I get more blood flow to the brain. So the fat and protein says to the arteries, relax, man. But the cola that you guzzle says, prepare for a spike, and you're going to quiver, and you're going to get more narrow. You're not relaxing. So I love that. And in fact, your bulletproof diet could just summarize saying, relax, man.
I like it.
Relax your blood vessels.
Stress does affect blood vessels. Any kind of stress, even if you have a bad relationship, it will
absolutely
be reflected in the endothelium. Now, I want to ask about inflammation in general more, but let's zoom in for listeners. What can you do to make your endothelium healthier quickly?
All right. Two very simple things. One, I call it my 5S diet in the inflammation book. Salmon, seafood, wild sockeye salmon, you mentioned.
Yep.
Smoothies, a shake a day relaxes endothelium that way.
That's made out of sugar, bananas.
Lots of fruits.
I'm kidding.
What
do you put in
smoothie? Dave, your mother told you that. Put more color on your plate in your smoothie. So
polyphenols,
I have.
Okay.
Berries. Wow, berries, fabulous stuff. Berries, I put avocado, coconut oil, and nut butters.
There you go. That's
in
a good
my smoothie.
Yeah,
three fats there on a very busy day, a high energy day, like in my office. I put those three fats. Then I put four different berries. I put kale in it. I put a good protein powder, and I put kefir is my favorite. Kefir or green tea is my favorite fluid. And I get pomegranates when they're in season, and I scoop out one whole pomegranate and throw that in. And then I sip on my smoothie throughout the day. And then the fourth is snacks, the rule of twos. Eat twice as often, half as much, and chew twice as long. And then the next is supplements. Three main supplements is omega-3 supplements if you don't like fish, fruit and vegetable supplements if you don't eat 10 fistfuls a day, and then if you don't like salmon, Hawaiian astaxanthin supplement, a anti-inflammatory. So first of all, to keep down the sticky stuff, to keep the endothelium open, the 5S diet, which is a plant-based diet and seafood. Not a vegan diet, but plant-based and seafood. The secondly is movement. Now, I want to really show you some fascinating new studies. You go to the doctor and says, Joe, you got to move more, man. You're a sitter. You got to be a mover. They don't tell you why. So let's go back into the blood vessel and picture that blood vessel with the silver lining and all those trillions of squirt bottles. When you move, when you jog, when you dance, when you run, or you just walk fast, the faster blood flow over the tops of the medicine bottles creates a energy field called a shear force, and it pops the medicine bottles open. So next time you're on a treadmill or walking with friends, just think, I'm opening my medicine bottles. And if you really want to shock your friends in the gym on the treadmill next to you, say, oh, it feels so good to be making my own medicines and opening my medicine bottles. Or you could really shock them and say, it feels so good to be growing my brain garden. Because nice. One of the medicines you make when you move is called brain growth factor, fertilizer for our brain garden. So you could just say, I'm fertilizing my brain garden when I'm running.
Oh, so much knowledge there. So the brain growth factor is part of the brain-derived nootropic factor, right? BDNF.
Yes, yes.
And I write about that in Headstrong, and we are actually launching a supplement called Neuromaster that increases BDNF four times more than exercise.
Wow.
So it's a polyphenol extract of the fruit of coffee rather than the coffee beans. It turns out that those bright red coffee cherries have useful in this stuff if you don't let them spoil during coffee processing. So we can take those and pull out this one compound that's clinically studied to raise BDNF. So
good for you.
My hippocampal volume at 44 is in the 86th percentile. And for people listening, that means the size of my brain structure that shrinks when you age, it's not shrinking because of the practices that are in the Bulletproof diet and raising BDNF with exercise. And then shear force.
I'm so glad you're doing the shear force. Yes.
Shear forces. This morning, I spent 18 minutes on the Bulletproof Vibe right before our interview. This is a whole body vibration platform that we manufacture. 30 times a second, it goes up and down, and it creates a shear force, kind of like a trampoline would, but a trampoline's once a second. This is 30 times a second, and you bend your legs a little bit, but it's creating this systemic vibration, which absolutely has endothelial effects.
Yes, yes.
And I did it in front of a tanning lamp that's high in UVB and low in UVA because ultraviolet light also has some effects on mitochondria and even on your endothelial layer by releasing nitric oxide.
Yes.
So there's so much you can do, but even just a walk is enough, right?
Well, a fast walk. See, in order to get that shear force you mentioned, the blood has to travel fairly fast over the medicine bottles to create that shear force.
Mm-hmm.
And as you say, it's nitric oxide. And what you mentioned, that's the medicine we're making. And I'll tell you a little story. I was giving a talk in Nashville last year, the music capital of the country.
Yeah.
I thought I was going to walk in and talk to a group of adults. I go in, and there are 150 children.
Wow.
So I had to kind of make it childlike. So I changed the title to A Visit to Veggie Land. And Veggie Land was your brain. And health makes beautiful music. You think of your brain like a symphony orchestra, and it has about 100 different players in that orchestra. And insulin is your master conductor. And brain growth factor is another master conductor. So when those conductors are right on, all your neurohormones or neurotransmitters all come together and play beautiful music. And let's call the conductor VEG, vascular endothelial growth factor, because it makes more brain growth. And so a little girl comes up to me afterwards by name of Annabelle, and she says, "Dr. Sears, I will always remember VEG. I will always remember to grow more veg for my brain by moving more. When I get out and play and when I get out and run, I'll remember I'm growing more veg."
Kids are so cute. I posted a study the other day on Facebook. They found that when boys are, when they get less than 3 hours of physical movement a day, their math and reading skills decline, but not in girls. Though both genders need that kind of exercise, but it may be because it's mediated by VEGF. I don't think we know the mechanisms there. We just know if they don't move around, their brains don't work.
You're exactly right. In fact, there's a study. I gave a talk there in Naperville, Illinois. And I grew up in the big sticky food eating Midwest. But this study came out of Naperville, Illinois, where they took kids, high school kids, who had some of the D's, ADD, ADHD, and all this stuff, and they brought them to school a half hour early, and they ran them around the track. Many of them could come off their meds. Their test scores went way up. And the teacher said, "What is going on?" And they found that the more the students move, the better they did in class. And I'll tell you my own little ADHD story. This is going back 60-some-odd years. Way back in the fourth grade, my fourth grade teacher, Sister Mary Ursula. Ursula means little bear in Latin. Now, little bear had my number. She said, "Billy, you're staring out the window," because I wanted to be out the window. You're staring out the window and you're fidgeting. Go outside and run around the schoolyard 3 times and come back and sit still." That was my Ritalin. It worked like a charm. Fast forward now to this year, the number one medicine for the D's, ADD, ADHD, and school problems and all, a little four-letter word, move. Move more. When they took recess out of school, the Ritalin dosage went up. Yeah. I think there's a correlation.
So what you're saying is that you can just substitute Ritalin for recess to save time and be more effective on standardized tests?
Oh, yeah. No, the more the more kids, yes. The more kids move. Like we had a rule in our house, you might do what it says, that sitting equals moving. Yeah. The more time you sit playing video games, that must equal the time you spent moving. And in fact, I remember one of our kids, I love these new tech stuff that's coming out, where kids are actually moving, like jumping on a trampoline or dancing to get to the videos. I love those Dance Revolution type of videos.
My kids are allowed to play that even though they're in a Waldorf school. They're not really supposed to. But I tell you, my kids have the moves. Like, they can outdance me because these video games show their brain and their body work together when they do that. And they move. It's healthy.
But you mentioned the magic move, dance. Actually, when I read the research, how dancers have a much lower incidence of Alzheimer's, we took up dancing. My wife and I took up dancing, and we're very accomplished ballroom dancers now. And dancing, Dave, it's not only the movement, but you have to coordinate the music. Now, I'm a klutz. My wife's a very good dancer. I'm a klutz. And so when we started out, I had to hold a cue card behind her back and follow the cue card as I was dancing before I got the rhythm. But dance, I can't think of my two favorite exercises are swimming and dancing.
And it, one of the things about it's dancing, great. You have to move over the center line of the body. There's cross patterning, which increases
exactly.
the corpus callosum.
You're right.
The other one like that I would suggest for listeners is ping pong. And that came from Daniel Amen, who's mm-hmm. who's a friend. And I went and I saw him, and he's like, Dave, for your brain, play ping pong. So I bought a ping pong robot, and mm-hmm. it serves ping pong balls really fast. And you can sit there and kind of try and do the Bruce Lee thing.
Yeah.
But because you have to think and move across the midline, at least for my brain, where I didn't learn to move well as a kid, I read at 18 months. So I was just reading as a kid instead of crawling and doing all this other stuff.
Yeah.
And so some of, like, I'm a klutz too. My dancing, it's improved recently, but it's about as good as my singing and rapping, which is pretty,
I know.
pretty limited, we'll put it that way.
We won't sing for our listeners then.
I did, by the way. So I shot my first rap recently. I'm not a rapper or even into the genre particularly, but a good friend is. So to promote Headstrong, we filmed a real and like recorded a real rap with like real people who know how to do it. Yeah. Which for me was a cognitive challenge, like pushing your limits. So mm-hmm. people will eventually be able to see this on YouTube where I'm completely making a fool of myself. But it was for a good cause. You know, how headstrong am I? Can I take up something I know nothing about and then
fail a little bit? I'm so glad you mentioned ping pong, because we have a new book coming out called Transform 5, Makeover Your Mind and Body, 5 Changes in 5 Weeks. And one of the, we have a list of favorite of best exercises for your brain.
Oh, cool. We have dance, I'll read that.
Dance and ping pong, because you have to react very quickly.
Yeah.
So I'm so glad you mentioned ping pong. And another thing I'm sure in Headstrong, you're going to talk a lot about meditation.
Oh, it's giant. In fact, I run the world's highest end neurofeedback meditation clinic, like a 5-day focus program with clinical grade electrodes on your head. It's changed my life.
Oh, good for you.
Like it's called 40 Years of Zen. It's outside of Bulletproof, but it's big.
Oh, good. Well, good for you. See, what you're talking about. See, you know, we haven't mentioned any prescription medicines.
Yeah.
What we're talking about is what I call the pills and skills model. Skills before pills. Now, we all know that you will reach a point where you do need some pills and you need supplements, but pills and skills. And one of those beautiful skills is the way we start the day. If your brain could prompt you, which it sounds like it has for you, it would say, start the day a beautiful way by meditation. So, and everybody has their own way.
Yeah.
What I love is I call it swimming meditation. There's actually a name called flotation therapy.
Oh, in a flotation chamber?
No, I do it just in a pool.
Okay.
But there's a chamber too, but you get in a pool and you do, and the breaststroke is the easiest, and you time the breaststroke to your mantra.
Wow, like, I've never heard of this, but it's so smart.
I love my life. I love my wife. Guide me today, or something where you're swimming in the rhythm of what you're thinking.
That's powerful. Wow.
A fabulous way to start the day.
There's something I learned in Tibet called a walking meditation, where you walk really slowly with full awareness of each step and you repeat a mantra. But doing it swimming puts you in a more of a parasympathetic, more of like a prenatal thing. Swimming does something to your nervous system like you had when you're in the womb. You're more programmable in water, basically. So
exactly. Yes.
Wow. No one's ever mentioned that. Like in 360 episodes, you're the first person. That's awesome, Bill.
Really?
I had no idea.
It's like, that's why swimming is the best exercise during pregnancy for the women. But it's a flotation therapy. And see, the reason is, I think it's walking. Walking is great too.
Yep.
I walk a lot. But with swimming, you're natural floating. There's a natural rhythm. So you can periodically just stop and kick your feet. And I call it mind mute. Mm-hmm. I just mute my mind for maybe 5 or 10 seconds as you're dangling and floating. And then you get back to your mantra. And the rhythm in the pool is, I think, much more brain-friendly for meditation than maybe walking, although a good old walk in the woods, you can't beat that.
I believe you're absolutely right. It reminds me, too, I filmed a documentary on toxic mold exposure from the environment, which is, in my experience, the single biggest mitochondrial poisoning happening in the world, other than maybe glyphosate. Yes. Thank you, Monsanto, for spraying it on everything. But those things are such a problem. And one of the people I filmed was on a walker. She could barely move. And what she would do is she would drag her walker to the swimming pool, fall into the water, and then when she was in the water, she could swim. And she'd swim two laps, climb out, and walk and go about her day without the walker.
Right? Wow. That
profound.
Is fabulous. It's profound. It's a good word for it, because that's why I think it's law now that every pool, especially public pools, must have a lift,
a
electric lift. So if you are handicapped, you just sit there. In fact, I was kidding my wife one day. I said, when I get too old to walk, just dump me in the pool in the morning and pick me up in the evening and let me float around.
It's perfect. And for her, the neurological effect of floating and kicking turned her nervous system back on, and she was able to function only if she swam every day. And it
absolutely.
What a weird symptom from mitochondrial poisoning, but it goes down to your brain and just being rewired.
Mm-hmm.
There's also flotation tanks, and I have one downstairs, the ones with Epsom salt, where you can just kind of close your eyes and float as a way of accelerating meditation. But I find there are probably faster ways to do that with feedback than there are just from minimizing noise. Do you recommend those? Do you use flotation tanks?
I do.
Okay.
Yes, I do, and I don't have one, but as I mentioned earlier, I periodically maybe every 10 minutes during my half-hour swim, I will pretend I'm sort of in a tank and just go to the deep end, or sometimes the deep end where I can just put my toe on the very bottom and just sort of dangle. See, the beautiful thing about a tank is you can dangle.
Mm-hmm.
It's that weightless dangle feeling that mutes your mind. I think when you take pressure off your body, you take pressure off your mind. So yes, I'm a real favor of those tanks.
What about cold? Do you ever do ice baths, cold showers, rolling in snow and getting in saunas, any of that kind of weird stuff?
I do. Okay. In fact, it sounds like we're weird in the same way, Dave.
I interviewed Wim Hof the other day, the Iceman, about this. And so you do practice.
When we were fishing in Alaska on a fishing boat, we went up next to an iceberg, and I just couldn't resist. I put my Speedos on, although my daughters say, Dad, you're too old for Speedos. I say, nonsense. So I put my Speedos on, and I jumped in the icy water right next to the iceberg. No, 10 seconds.
Isn't that where the great whites swim?
Okay. Yeah, right. I can outswim them.
You were chumming.
But, you know, in and out. But it's interesting. Some resorts have plunge pools where you go in a hot tub and then you go into a cold tub. It's extremely invigorating and then relaxing. So I love that. Cold therapy.
The idea of calling it relaxing, I mean, most people listening who've never tried this are going, it's not relaxing. It feels like you're going to die. But there's something weird that happens. I've got a tank that gets me up to my neck if I'm sitting, and it has a digital chiller on it. So the clinical tanks are very expensive. So I bought an agricultural livestock tank and plumbed it up myself. But the digital chiller is the cool part. So I dial in 60 degrees. And you get in there, and at first, like, I'm going to die. And then 5 minutes later, you feel like you're in a hot tub. Like everything's just tingly and good. It's very odd.
Yeah. Odd is a good word for it, but it's after. Do you feel afterwards, maybe 5 minutes later, a different feeling of relaxation?
Yeah, something really good happens. And I believe it's because your mitochondria shrink and the electron transport chain becomes more efficient. And you get all sorts of opiates that are released, but it's a powerful thing. Even though you're cold for a while, like people who hug you will be like, you feel colder. but yeah. You feel better. It's kind of strange.
Exactly.
I did this once when I was doing the research for the Bulletproof Diet. I was in Las Vegas and I had a really stressful flights all over the place. So I did an ice bath in my tub in the hotel. And then I went out to a party from some big technology vendor. This is when I was still working in computer security. And it turns out they had like one of the Playboy Playmates of the Year and all these like incredibly attractive women there and a bunch of like old married white guys from the computer security industry, which is like a party of geeks. Like it was fun.
Yeah.
And so I got a hug from one of the women, and I'm forgetting her name right now, but she was really cool. We talked about skincare, but she gave me a hug and she was like, "You're really cold." I'm like, "Oh, I forgot I was doing an ice bath," but she was like, "I'm hugging a corpse. What's going on with this?" I'm like, "No, I feel really good. I promise." So yeah, it was funny.
Yeah. Yeah. It's you know, that it's, see nature, what is the, we have a little chapter on a book, The Healing, is called Go Outside and Play is the name of the chapter.
Yeah.
And like Dr. Mom said, you remember Dr. Mom, our mother's medicine for boredom and bad behavior?
What's that?
Go outside and play.
Yeah.
Yeah, my mom used to go outside and play. Well, it's interesting, the healing effects of nature. And we learned that over in Japan. I was lecturing in Japan on brain health. And after one of the lectures, our guest says, "Now we're going to take you and Mrs. Sears out for some Shinrin Yoku," which I thought was a drink.
Yeah, it sounds like good sake.
I was tired after lecturing all day. And so we get in the car and we drive up to a mountaintop into the woods with pine trees, and you can feel the humidity, the coolness and all. And he says, "And we're going to walk around in the woods for half hour and then get back in the car." Wow. Nature therapy, the healing effects of just a simple walk in the woods. Wow.
I specifically live in a forest, so that's
good.
Out the window to my left here is the path that goes down and winds through. We don't have quite ancient stuff because years ago someone cut down all the really big trees and sold them, bastards. But we have 50 and 80-year-old trees, but they're young by local standards.
Yes.
And there's a book called The Secret Life of Trees. Have you ever heard of
it? I read it on the airplane the other day.
It's a fascinating book. And forest bathing, there's wisdom in those trees. Like they're
forest
alive.
Bathing, exactly. Exactly. It's forest bathing. And there's that's what Shinrin Yoku in Japan, probably not pronounce it right, means forest bathing.
Yeah.
And wow, that's trees. And actually, I'll tell you a tree story then, since we're talking about trees. I was over lecturing in Singapore last year. And we went into this, what they call a billion-dollar garden. It was a big greenhouse, cost $1 billion to build. They had all the best architects in the world, the best, all the plant experts and everything. But after they finished, they noticed the trees and the plants were dying. Now, they had all the architecture and everything. And somebody figured out, well, we're feeding them properly, we're fertilizing, we're doing everything they do in nature, but they're dying. And then one smart person said, "You know what? Notice the trees. They don't move. The leaves are still." So then they put fans to let the trees move a little bit, and they flourished.
Yeah.
And it's almost like, gosh, we can take a lesson from, I call it lesson from leaves, that if you are still too much, sit too much and don't move, you wither. If you move, you flourish. So that's a lesson from leaves.
It's interesting. Humans and trees and all animals, the water in our cells is different. And the guy who discovered this, Dr. Gerald Pollack, spoke at the Bulletproof Conference last year.
Oh, good. Yeah.
About exclusion zone water. And it turns out the two things that are going to make it are movement and infrared light. So when you put trees under LED lights with no infrared, they don't get it. And when they have no movement from wind, they don't get it. And their sap is the wrong viscosity. And when don't get it, our blood, and more importantly, the water that allows these batteries in our cells to work, is also the wrong viscosity. It's too thick or not thick enough. And so it's really interesting to try and put together your own forest when we're still understanding like mitochondrial dynamics and maybe don't really have a full grasp of everything mitochondria do yet.
Well, yeah, but you know what's interesting, very simply, and we write a lot about mitochondria, which I call Mighty Mitochondria,
right? You know? In fact, that's the name of a chapter in my new book.
Mighty Mitochondria. Yeah. And the little mitos, and when you feed them, and you see the cell, two things are: we're only as healthy as the blood vessels feeding our organs, but every organ's only as healthy as every cell in it, and every cell is only healthy as the health of the mitochondria in the cell. So you take care of the cell membrane, that package of the cell, and the mitochondria function better, and you don't get mitochondrial dysfunction, another dysfunction. And you know what the membrane is made of mostly? Fat.
Yes.
Getting back to the healthy fat.
Undamaged fat, not fried fat, not margarine.
Undamaged fat, right. Good fats that says, you know, we're going to let in the good stuff for the mitochondria, and we're going to kick out the bad stuff. Take care of your cellular membranes.
Yeah, if people regularly got lab tests for their cell membrane function, they'd be scared. And I actually got one done recently. I wish I could remember the name of the lab offhand, but I did a very comprehensive panel, probably the most comprehensive I've ever done, with a full body fMRI and DEXA and everything.
Yeah,
and they said I had one of the better cell membrane functionings of like, it's very unusual for someone in your age and profession to have functioning cell membranes. Like, yeah, like it's by design.
By design, absolutely. See, and again, I can imagine if I said that to my patients, hey, you have a cell membrane dysfunction, they wouldn't have a clue what I'm talking about. But that's right. If your cell membranes are not keeping out the bad stuff and not letting in the good stuff, the energy batteries, that's why we get sick and tired. Basically, mitochondrial dysfunction is why we get sick and tired.
Now, in fact, when it works really well, that's when your brain works. That's the whole point. But you absolutely get this. I love chatting with you about it. I have a question about other endothelial healing techniques, because I've been targeting my endothelium for a long time, because when I was 26, 27, I had some lab work's done. I used to weigh 300 pounds, and I was exercising, and I was eating, you know, low fat, high carb, minimum calorie diet, all that crap that doesn't work.
Yeah.
And lots of job stress and relationship stress and all that. But I had a very high risk of stroke and heart attack. I had high fibrinogen. My blood would clot completely within 10 seconds when it was taken out of the body, and they were worried. Yeah. And frankly, telling me that I was going to die like I was old before I was 30 was really good, because it made me go to an anti-aging group, and like, I learned a lot. But I started looking at my endothelial system there. And one of the things back then, this is 10 plus years ago, that had good evidence for it was something called exercise with oxygen therapy. Is this something you've ever played with?
You know, I haven't, Dave, but it makes sense. It really makes sense. And what you mentioned about fibrinogen and clotting, this is an interesting story. This is how it was all discovered. What you discovered is you had high levels of sticky stuff in your blood.
Yes, I did.
To make it simple, sticky fibrinogens, a clotting. Fibrinogens like a net, like a fish net, and it collects all the stuff and clogs your arteries. If it's too high, you want some of it so you don't bleed, but not too much. I was fishing with a doctor, Jorn Darberg, over in Norway about 10 years ago, and he told me the story how they discovered the blood thinning effect of salmon and fish oil. He went to, this was way back when the low-fat diet came out and all that low-fat craze, and he says, something doesn't make sense here. Eskimos have the highest fat diet in the world, but the lowest incidence of heart disease. So he hops on a plane, goes to Norway, from Norway to Greenland, and draws blood from the Eskimos. And he found that the Eskimo blood clotted half as fast as the same blood samples from Europeans and Americans. So and that was a discovery that fish oil, fat actually thins the blood and lowers the level of the clotting factors. And that's why Eskimos don't get heart disease.
It's also why Eskimos get more nosebleeds than average.
You know, we've got some connection here. I think it's called mirror neurons.
Oh, there you go.
Because,
exactly.
Because I asked Jorn, now, was there any, was there any problem you saw? He said, well, you know, it's kind of a nuisance. They have a lot of nosebleeds.
Wow.
And I thought it was due to the low humidity in the igloos, you know. But no, you're right. It's a little side effect of good medicine.
Growing up, I had at least 10 nosebleeds a day. And In my case, I lived in a basement that had Stachybotrys, the toxic mold. And we didn't know at the time. No one knew that stuff in the 80s. And This is a symptom of that. I also had cognitive dysfunction and swelling and arthritis since I was 14 and all these other bad things that came from slow poisoning of my mitochondria, which is what those molds do. Mitochondria are bacteria. Molds and bacteria are ancient enemies and they fight each other. And what was really interesting for me, though, is I became aware of what causes nosebleeds. So I can, to this day, if I go around certain species of mold that are inside, you know, water-damaged buildings that smell a bit off, within a day, like I'm like, God, I'm just nose bleeding. But if I take too much fish oil, even if I'm not exposed to mold, I'll get the same thing, just like gushing blood. So you can titrate your blood based on how bright it is and how well it runs, which is fascinating to me.
Yeah. And I see you're fascinated with these new exciting technology and lab tests. Actually, there's a brand new test where you on a little finger stick, a drop of your blood, you can check the level of your omega-3s and your omega-6s.
Is that from ZRT or is it from another company? Do you know which
one? I know there are a bunch of them. Vital Choice makes one.
Oh, that's right. I have
Omega
one from Randy.
Quant. Yeah. Yeah, Randy. Randy at Vital Choice. And just a little finger stick. And you put it on a little envelope and mail it in. And it gives you your fat profile in your blood. How much the level of omega-3s, the level of omega-6s, because one of the causes of inflammation is we are a country of inflammation imbalance. Mm-hmm. And one of the biggest causes is too much of omega-6s and not enough omega-3s. Omega-6s, they're necessary. They're essential fat, but they're like a neighborhood bully. If you eat too much of them, then they use up all the enzymes and the omega-3s can't get into your cells. So the simple little test is, I say, we're going to measure your omega balance and say, really? Yeah, we're going to measure omega. And that's how also I get the vegans in my practice, you know, in California, a lot of vegans. I say, okay, vegan diet's extremely healthy. You'll probably live a lot longer. All the studies are good, but you could have an omega-3 deficiency because you don't eat fish. So let's measure your blood for your level of omega-3s. And most of them come back low. And that's how I motivate them to at least take an algae-based fish oil supplement. But my favorite is vegan plus, vegetarian plus seafood is, I guess, the diet that you and I are mostly on.
It needs to be a big plate of vegetables. And
absolutely.
And you got to eat some fish. I'm like, if you eat some grass-fed beef or lamb, it'll help you. But I gave a talk at the largest raw vegan conference. This is the David Wolf conference a while back. And I said, guys, here's the deal with grass-fed ghee. It helps to accelerate the polyphenols from the vegetables. If you're a vegan, I was a raw vegan for a long time, and I ended up getting problems from it. In fact, a lot of vegans do end up, as you know, developing things that go way beyond B12 deficiency.
Yes.
And I just quit doing it because it didn't work for me. And it turns out there's environmental arguments against it as well, where if you don't have animals pooping on the soil, you're not going to like your vegan vegetables. Sorry, guys. Like, it's this whole circle thing.
Right.
But so I really struggled with that. Just so I don't like to torture animals. Like that's why I know the guys who raise my cows and things like that. But I gave this talk, and the next year I came back to the same conference and I said, how many of you are eating ghee? And 3/4 of the room had added ghee or butter back into their vegan diet.
Wonderful.
And they felt better. They were warmer.
Yeah.
And so it's like, I always struggle because it's fine. Eating lots of vegetables is the right thing to do. Caring about animal welfare, caring about soil, all that stuff is really good.
Yeah.
But if you're not getting some egg yolks, like gently cooked egg yolks, and some grass-fed butter, you're not going to have functioning cell membranes. And then all that care that you put into your food, you're not putting into your body. And you're not going to function at the level you're capable of functioning as a human being trying to do the right thing.
Absolutely. I'm so glad you mentioned eggs, because eggs have been, shall we say, exonerated from... You remember? I shudder when I go into a restaurant for breakfast and I say, egg white omelet, please. Well, man, you're missing the best part of the egg.
Like, give me the yolks.
You don't get fat by eating fat again. So an egg, and I do this in my office. I say, all right, tomorrow when you're hungry, eat an egg. Say a hard-boiled egg or a nicely cooked egg. Just eat an egg. 75 measly calories, okay, if you're a calorie counter, which I'm not. Then next day, when you're same time, same hunger, eat a slice of white bread.
Yeah.
Same number of calories. And notice an hour later how you feel. From the egg, you're not hungry. You feel good. You're hungry and a little bit foggy an hour or two after the white bread because it's junk carbs. So an egg, I eat an egg a day.
I actually recommend, especially for women in the morning, you want to get some protein. Not always, sometimes just fat's fine. But the top protein to put in Bulletproof coffee is the grass-fed collagen that I make, because collagen is an anti-inflammatory protein. It's got powerful stuff. But you can also, you blend the coffee first, which cools down a bit. You can crack 2 eggs into your coffee and blend it. And
I've got to try that.
It doesn't make chunks or anything gross. It's not like a smoothie. It actually just disappears. You're like, the coffee's creamy like it was before. But you just got all the egg goodness, and it wasn't even damaged by frying it or overcooking it. And you just drink it, and it's basically just makes the coffee even more rich in protein and then phospholipids, these healthy fats. It's a kind of a cool hack.
Do you feel good after eating an egg?
You know,
in my imagination, I do. I feel
always
terrific.
Felt amazing from eggs. And then I went on the pseudo Eskimo diet during my research for the Bulletproof diet. And egg yolks especially like restored my wife's fertility. They're such a core part of becoming strong. When I went on a zero-carb diet, like one serving of vegetables a day and tons of fat and protein, I actually developed an allergy to eggs because I couldn't make the mucus lining of my gut. And I'm about 70% done with it, but I still have a small reaction to them. So I actually feel angry when I eat eggs now. But I used to feel good.
It's called microexposures. If you start eating a little bit of an egg each day, you'll gradually, your immune system will say, okay, welcome back, egg.
Yeah.
But actually, a little secret, before a lecture, as you and I know, lectures wear you out.
They do.
You know, you're mentally really tired. I love doing them, but they're tiring.
Yeah.
So I slip, if say I have a 7 o'clock evening lecture, I'll go to the men's room or someplace I can hide at 6:30 and I'll eat a hard-boiled egg.
Mm-hmm.
That's my before lecture snack. It doesn't fill me up, so I'm feeling too full, but it lasts an hour, hour and a half as a perfect, I just love eggs for a snack.
All right, I've got to send you something else. I'm going to send you the Bulletproof collagen bars. These have that brain octane oil in them.
Good.
And they have 2 grams of carbs that come from the cashews, the raw cashews they're made with. This is what I do now, partly because I developed my egg sensitivity that I'm still hacking, but also the oil in it raises your ketone levels. So you get ketones to feed the neurons while you're lecturing. And for me, that's been a big thing. So we'll send you some of these just because like as a portable food, sometimes you can't get a hard boiled egg or it's not organic and whatever. It's changed my travel pretty radically. So it'd be my pleasure to send you some.
You know, that's good because, see, those are the fats that the brain loves because they can use them real fast. Yeah. And you're probably a fan of olive oil, too?
Absolutely, right.
I love a salad. We talked about salads earlier. Here's my little favorite. I have a salad every day, in the evening usually, but twice a week I make a hot salad. I just make the same salad, big salad, and I put it in a steamer for 2 minutes, and then I take it out and I drizzle a tablespoon of olive oil on it, and then I put turmeric and black pepper on it. Turmeric and black pepper. Turmeric's your top anti-inflammatory spice, and you pair it with black pepper, and it increases the absorption. And that's my hot salad. And I eat it with chopsticks. That's our biggest weight management tool that we use in our medical practice.
Chopsticks.
Is we say no fork, use a chopstick, especially for these big guys who are gorgers. And I tell their wives, I say, hide all the forks, make them use a chopstick. It will slow him down. And I actually thought of that when I was giving a talk over in China a couple of years ago. I was invited by the Chinese government to give a talk. I said, why? They said, because the Chinese are eating like Americans and they're getting sick like Americans. So please come over and talk about it. So at the end of the talk, one of the Chinese doctors said, Dr. Sears, why do Americans eat so much so fast? I said, bingo, you pinpointed our problem.
Absolutely.
So I said, I think I'll try to make a law against forks and make everybody use chopsticks. I was kind of kidding, but I thought that's not a bad idea. So you listeners might try that.
All right.
Put away the fork, use a chopstick. You'll enjoy each bite. We call it choo-choo times two. we're doing a little book on the microbiome too, the gut bugs. And I have a little picture in my office showing the kids the gut bugs, the microbiome. And I have a little saying, the better you chew, the better you poo. the kids are coming in with constipation all the time. So the only way I can get them to chew longer instead of gorging their food is by going down to their level and saying, the better you chew, the better you poo.
I love that, and we're coming up on the end of the interview, and there's a question that I'm really eager to hear your answer to. It's something I've asked every guest on the show, and it's, if someone came to you tomorrow and they said, all right, Dr. Bill Sears, I want to perform better at everything I do throughout my day, throughout my life, what are the three most important things that I need to know? Like what would you offer them?
Eat real foods. Meditate more, agitate less, move more, sit less. Those are my three.
I love it. Well thank you so much for a fascinating, far-reaching interview. Quite a lot of fun. And people can find out more about you by looking at your new book, which is called...
The Inflammation Solutions, our newest. And then we have a new one coming out in a few months called the Transform 5. But they can learn all about it. We have our website, AskDrSears.com, or our Wellness Institute, the Dr. Sears Wellness Institute.org.
Okay.
And Dave, it's been a real pleasure. One of the reasons that we do all these book writings and everything, I call it the helper's high.
Yeah.
I think if you and I, from what we had to say today, can change the lives of maybe a few hundred people out there who live happier and longer, then we go to bed tonight with that extra dose of helper's high.
Yeah, very well said. That's why I started the show. It's why I started this whole company. And it's why you do what you do, very obviously.
Yes.
Well, and thanks for all your helping. Thanks for your work. I'm certainly familiar with it. And even in my Better Baby book, I'm sure I read some of your things and learned from them. So you've made a difference on literally millions of people. So thank you for being on Bulletproof Radio.
Thank you, Dave.
The Human Upgrade, formerly Bulletproof Radio, was created and is hosted by Dave Asprey. The information contained in this podcast is provided for informational purposes only and is not intended for the purposes of diagnosing, treating, curing, or preventing any disease. Before using any products referenced on the podcast, consult with your healthcare provider, carefully read all labels, and heed all directions and cautions that accompany the products. Information found or received through the podcast should not be used in place of a consultation or advice from a healthcare provider. If you suspect you have a medical problem or should you have any healthcare questions, please promptly call or see your healthcare provider. This podcast, including Dave Asprey and the producers, disclaim responsibility for any possible adverse effects from the use of information contained herein. Opinions of guests are their own, and this podcast does not endorse or accept responsibility for statements made by guests. This podcast does not make any representations or warranties about guest qualifications or credibility. This podcast may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products or services. Individuals on this podcast may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to herein. This podcast is owned by Bulletproof Media.